You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listener questions live, week two. The Bengals get set to take on the Chicago Bears in the Windy City. We've got y'all covered on CincyJungle.com and on this podcast. It's been a busy week on this show, but happy to be with everybody. I'm Anthony Cazenza, joined by John Sheeran, who has his Twitter handle up at John_Sheeran.
What the hell? I didn't know that was there.
Well, it's there.
A shame if people clicked on it and followed it.
How's it going, man?
I'm good, man. It's been a good week, but now we are in antagonistic mode. If you rock with Central Time, I'm not rocking with you this weekend, most likely. Bengals take on the Bears in Chicago. The Cincinnati Bearcats ranked higher than the Ohio State Buckeyes in the latest AP poll, taking on the Indiana Hoosiers in Bloomington, ooh, Indiana. So if you're in that part of the country, odds are I'm not rocking with you this weekend.
Well, I, some people were jokingly calling me the good luck charm because I came out to the game last week, and I left some Bengals good luck in Chicago because I had a layover back home. So hopefully I left a little, some good juju for the Bengals there, and we'll see what happens. But an interesting game nonetheless. You can get your questions to us in a variety of ways. Usually we come at you a little later, but schedule-wise, this is where the live recording could be squeezed in here. But you can get your questions to us in a number of different ways. We've got live chats going in the Orange and Black Insider YouTube channel, so please leave them there. There's a live chat going there on the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. We're streaming on Twitter at the Cincy Jungle Twitter handle, the Orange and Black Insider Twitter handle. There is a post on CincyJungle.com where you can leave your questions there. And then, of course, you can call, text 949-542-6241. Email theobinsider@gmail.com. No excuses. Get your questions in. Let's see here. There was one. You want to start with the one on the comment thread on Cincy Jungle? Did you see that one from Perfectionist?
I did see that one. So Perfectionist is asking, if the three safety sets on defense is a question right now, do you know who may have been taking snaps in camp in those three safety sets? I'm pretty sure Ricardo Allen missed some time in camp. Was there any use of Darius Phillips opposite of Bates? Might make sense with the Irwin call-up. So we talked about this on the weekly show. Ricardo Allen, in case you haven't heard, is on injured reserve at the moment. He's on there with a broken hand and a hamstring sprain. He played 21 snaps against the Minnesota Vikings in week one, and he was out there along with Bates and Von Bell in some of those defensive looks. And we kind of talked about this earlier in the week. This could be a sign that Trayvon Henderson gets called up to the active roster to take his spot. They signed Sean Davis on the practice squad as well to fill out some depth. But I don't know. I guess the question really is, Anthony, do they continue to institute some of these looks just with another guy in Henderson or maybe Davis, or do they just kind of resort back to the defense that they played last year, where it's just mainly just Bates and Bell on the field for 100% of the snaps?
I may have missed it. Did they bring Davis up from, because he was on the practice squad, right?
I think he's still just on the practice squad. They won't elevate guys up until, like, I think tomorrow if they do.
Right. So, well, it'll be interesting to see if Davis gets the call up because, you know, new guy coming right in, like, in the early middle of the week. And then, you know, you throw him into this role that was just specifically pegged for Ricardo Allen. And he played pretty well. He had a good PFF score last week. So I would think that Davis would be the candidate to do it. I just don't know if it's going to be this week. Maybe it'll be next week once he gets kind of a little more acclimated to things going forward. So that would be my guy that I would think would do that in the interim. Hopefully, you know, the stint on IR is not going to be a long one there, but you know, I don't know really what they're going to do here. I mean, someone had asked, you know, is Darius Phillips, you know, a guy that can be in that mix? I don't think so. I think it's, that's just not his style of play. And so, you know, it just may be a little bit more two safety sets and they just make, you know, maybe they trot out an extra linebacker than they did in week one. The bottom line is here, what's going to make this not be an issue is if the defensive line keeps playing at a pretty high level or a very high level, because that's going to help, you know, alleviate some of the pressure on the safeties and the back end of the defense if they're able to get after the quarterback. But as of now, you know, I hope Ricardo Allen is not on IR very long. And then, you know, you've got a couple of options. I would think Davis would be the guy. I just don't know if it's going to be this week or next week.
And Almac too in the comments section asking why not use Brandon Wilson back there. Obviously, he's still on the roster. He's the third and only backup on the active roster at the moment. That's definitely a possibility. It's interesting because, you know, they played a lot of those defensive looks. And I think PFF Eric Eager noted that the Bengals disguised their coverages on like 16 of Kirk Cousins' dropbacks. They only averaged like 6 yards per attempt. So I think it did have an impact of disguising what they were going to do in the pre-snap phase and kind of confusing Minnesota a little bit. So that's also just a week one thing. There's not a lot of, you know, if teams end up changing their schemes and whatnot, you don't really know what to expect in week one. And that was kind of maybe an impact there. So we're going to go next to Joshua Patterson in the YouTube comment section. He's asking, do you think Ja'Marr Chase's success will continue going into week two, or do you think he will take a step back and T. Higgins or Tyler Boyd get more looks this week? Why wouldn't it? You know, it's not like Chicago necessarily has lockdown cornerbacks right now. It's perfectly conceivable that all three of those guys eat based off of what we saw the Rams kind of do against them. Obviously, the Bears playing at home might have something to do with. Maybe they play a little bit better. They can't really have played a lot worse, but I don't know. I don't really think there's anything to warrant concern thinking that Chase won't continue to play well against the weak secondary.
I don't think so either, but here's the thing, John. When we talk about the balance that the offense is trying to achieve, and if the goal is to keep Joe Burrow at about 35 dropbacks or less and give the ball to Joe Mixon 25-plus times on handoffs, you're not going to see multiple 100-yard receivers. You're not going to see, in all likelihood, you're not going to see a lot of that, because if you remember last year, Joe Burrow was throwing the ball 40 times, 45 times, 50 times. You know, he was setting attempts and completion records as a rookie quarterback because he was having to throw the ball so many times. So this year, at least early on, it would seem that the Bengals would prefer that Joe Burrow throws the ball 25 times, 30 times, maybe 35 times. And so what you may have there is, yeah, you could have all three guys kind of ball out in terms of Boyd, Higgins, and Chase, but you may have a guy like last week. I mean, Higgins had a solid game. He left for a little bit. Boyd was a little quiet, and Chase had the explosive week, right? This week, it could be Higgins that blows up. Chase has a solid day, not necessarily the same as last week, and maybe Boyd gets in the mix a little bit more. I don't know. I guess we just have to, while we all know those receivers are very talented, if the game plan is going to be continued balance on the offensive side of the ball, you may not have multiple 100-yard receivers every single week. It may be one guy gets the big game, another guy has a solid game, another guy's a little quiet, and it just may switch up week to week.
Yeah, I think this really depends on your definition of success, because unfortunately the expectations for Chase kind of dwindled after the preseason, and I think a lot of fans were just hoping that he would just look competent. And obviously, he balled out with one of the best debut performances in Bengals history. So success may not involve 100 yards and a touchdown, but it could involve continued solid route running, obviously no drops, and just staying open and being an option in the passing game. And I think that, to me, quantifies success in just your second career game. But you're right. It could be Higgins and Boyd who rack up the fantasy production this week.
Let's go to the text line. Area code 916. It's John from Sacramento, California. My question is, are we sleeping on the Bears defense? Did you guys think they just had a bad game defensively against the Rams? Or is the Bears defense not very good this year? Traditionally, we all know, I mean, going way back, the Bears defense has been always pretty good to very good. They've got some good players on that defense. We're waiting to kind of see what's going on with Eddie Goldman this week. And so I think maybe we are sleeping on the Bears defense a little bit, but I think what bodes well is this Rams McVay style of offense exposed them a little bit. And obviously Zach Taylor, he's not running the same exact offense, but there are nuances of this offense that he took from that system. And so maybe that bodes well for the Bengals this week, regardless of if we're undervaluing the Bears defense.
Yeah, they look terrible against the Rams. Really, I don't know how much that has to do with just McVay's scheme or Matthew Stafford's arm. Like, they played Matthew Stafford for the last 10 years. They knew what to expect from him, and they still couldn't do a damn thing to stop him. I think it's just fair to say they have a weak secondary, even with Eddie Jackson, and I guess that is about it in the secondary. They don't have any corners that can necessarily match up with the Bengals starting three receivers. I think their biggest concern is the defensive line. Like, you have to think that Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack are capable of playing better and can play better against a relatively weaker offensive line compared to the Rams that the Bengals have. And that's probably going to be where the game is made or break or broken for the Chicago Bears. If they want to keep it close, they have to take advantage of those mismatches up front. And for the Bengals stance, like, they have to step up and block those guys. Like, Akeem Hicks didn't necessarily play well against the Bears, but he's still a solid player. And Khalil Mack is Khalil Mack. He's still should be in the prime of his career. If they don't have Eddie Goldman, that's a huge blow, and I don't think he practiced on Thursday, and we've yet to see the practice report for Friday, but that defensive line can still cause problems, but as long as they keep him at bay, they should have no problem moving the ball against the secondary.
Agreed. And then they do have Roquan Smith there as well, a guy who can make some plays. So, I mean, there are players there, but, you know, that secondary was exposed last week and had a pretty poor PFF score as a pass defense unit. Where are we going next, John?
So I wanted to combine a couple questions here. I forgot where I saw the first one, but we had a question about Eli Apple and Trey Hopkins. Essentially, both players didn't necessarily play well. So, yeah, from Blackthorn in the YouTube, do you think Apple will play well, or do you think we should try other players at cornerback? And there was a question about Trey Hopkins, if he continues to not play well, do you think the Bengals will look for other options at center? Unfortunately, with Apple, I think it's just essentially a wait-and-see situation with Trey Waynes. I think there was a report from Bengals practice today that said Waynes looked to be in the next phase of coming back, potentially practicing next week. I think they're just going to keep Apple out there for as long as they kind of need to, because they don't really have other options. But I do think that there is still some faith in the organization for him to play a little bit better. And you could say the same thing and more with Trey Hopkins. Hopkins admitted that he just had a bad game. A lot of those issues were technique related, as he said in a press conference. So I don't think that they're going to look at other options for a guy that they have full trust and faith who just happened to have a bad game.
I agree with you. I think Hopkins is a guy who's safe, and it's the one position I think they would be open to moving things around or switching things up if there's continued issues is Xavier Suafilo, the right guard spot, because they have Jackson Carman waiting, who, by the way, was limited, I think, on Thursday or Friday with an issue. But they have a second-round pick waiting there. They've got Deontay Smith, who showed well in preseason and whatnot, albeit at the left guard spot. But, you know, they've got some options there at guard. The options at center are pretty limited. So, and I, you know, again, I think they're giving Trey Hopkins the benefit of the doubt that he was coming back pretty quickly from a significant knee injury and that there may be a little rust early on there. But, you know, it sounds like Phillips is not going to get his shot this week. It sounds like it's going to be Eli Apple. And there's been kind of some cryptic tweets from Darius Phillips too. I don't know. His Twitter account is always kind of an intriguing one to me, but so, I mean, it would seem that Apple's getting the start this week, and this is all just a plan for two, maybe three games until they get Trey Waynes back. But I would say of the spots that we're talking about, you know, I think right guard is the one that they would maybe be there's a little shorter leash on because there are more viable options. Obviously, the leash is kind of short with Eli Apple over there as well, because Waynes is conceivably going to come back in the next week or two.
And good on Darius Phillips. Like, people always are adding him when he tweets some cryptic stuff about, and they just assume it's about the Bengals. And he's like, right. No, this is not about the Bengals. And the fact that you're slandering, maybe not slander is not the exact word, but you're bashing a guy who's playing in the NFL is my teammate. Like, enough of this. Like, I'm sick of it. So good on him for standing up for that.
He doesn't pull punches in that regard. I saw one to kind of piggyback off of this question from IN Bengal fan. One of the more, just a good commenter on CincyJungle.com here. PFF scores aside, how did the interior of the O-line do according to your eyeball test? Was it really just Hopkins looking bad? Did Hopkins have any really good plays?
I thought they played decent. I think there was obviously the missed block from Suofilo that got Burrow hit on the touchdown. But other than that, I don't think Suofilo necessarily played that bad. I thought he looked a lot better in run blocking than what we saw last year. And that could just be a testament to the schemes and designs of Frank Pollock and maybe some new added on coaching as well. I think Spain played about to expectation. And I do think that Hopkins played decently well outside of just the really, really bad plays. But unfortunately, that's the reality for offensive linemen. If you're caught in 4K, you know, messing up and getting your quarterback hit a couple times, like, that is going to be the narrative that comes out of the game. And obviously Hopkins shouldn't be happy about it, but I think for the most part, he played okay. And it's just, unfortunately, those bad plays, they count for a lot more than the 80% of the good plays that you have.
I would agree. And this is, you know, we all like to use PFF as, you know, a really good barometer as to how players performed in a specific game and in scenarios and whatnot. But it's close to a perfect system, but it's still an imperfect system. And there are biases, there are different things that go into this and, you know, misreads of certain plays and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, while PFF is a great barometer to use as a gauge for how players performed in the game, you know, sometimes those numbers don't speak the entire story on some things. So, you know, I would say they played better than their scores would indicate, but I still don't think there was anything that was like, hey, you know, this they got robbed by PFF on these scores here. I mean, there were issues. So I do think part of it is week one, there's going to be rust. Trey Hopkins coming back from that injury. Xavier Suofilo didn't get he was injured for a good portion of last year as well. So these are guys still kind of getting used to things. New offensive line coach as well. So they're trying to get used to some things. But was it good? Not particularly. Was it as bad as maybe some of those scores indicated? I don't think so either.
I'm a big proponent of PFF. I think it's an extremely valuable resource. I do think, though, for people who are just starting to get familiar with it, it's better to look at scores over a multi-week period rather than just isolate individual week scores, because I think the process is great. I still don't 100% understand it. I don't know how, because they say that it goes from like a point system of up to positive two or down to negative two. And I don't think Hopkins played bad enough to warrant a 7.5. I don't necessarily know how the scores get to be that low, but I do think that it's better to look at it from a macro sense rather than a micro sense. So that's just something to keep in mind with PFF. Let's go to one of the more serious questions from the Orange Era Fantasy Show. Who wore it better, Gio and his mustache or Andy Dalton and his newfound beard game?
Gio and the mustache, I think. But I will say, you and I had a fun little exchange on Twitter yesterday about what Andy Dalton looked like. I said the comedian Anthony Jeselnik is who he looked like, just with the beard and the hair. I will say, you know, we called him the Red Rifle and all this stuff. Andy Dalton's hair game is usually pretty strong, man. He's got it quaffed pretty nice all the time. And I don't know, but I would say Gio, just because that was just an unbelievable caterpillar he had rocking right across the upper lip there.
I'm not very knowledgeable in terms of identifying specific types of mustaches, but that to me, it's just called the Geo at this point. I'm sure it has like an official name that's recognized by the majority of the population, but that type of mustache is just the Geo. It was so perfect. It was so unexpected and just kind of took hold of like the personality and the persona of who we knew as Giovanni Bernard. I do think though the beard it's working for Dalton. I think like honestly, in terms of a transformation of personality, like I have no idea who that guy is anymore. Like you said, like his hair is always great, but I don't know where that beard came from, man. And honestly,
we'll get John in just a sec.
Honestly, like it's a little bit funny because we know him to be Andy Dalton, but if you're not going to be a great quarterback, at least you kind of look kind of menacing, maybe. I don't know. But the Gio mustache is undefeated.
It is. It is. Real quick, too, just since we fielded a question from the Orange Arrow, and what a great question it was. He's been helping us out, bringing us a little fantasy football content. We're going to put that out. We're going to be putting them out regularly on Thursdays before the Thursday night game or before Sunday so you can set your fantasy lineups and everything like that. He, John, has shared a little bit, too. He has created a Put the Kens in Canton shirt. And the proceeds of that, you can hit him up on Twitter at the Bengal 4 for details on that. The shirt itself, the proceeds for it go to the pot in his charity league. So all the proceeds in his charity fantasy football league go to the Joe Burrow Hunger Relief Fund and other places as well. He's raised quite a bit of money, and this shirt here is one that he's putting out there. So if you want to rock these and maybe rock them for week 4, if we can get them out there, if he can get them out there to people in time for the great Ring of Honor ceremony to honor these two, that would be great. But he's got these there. He's asked us for a little favor and a shout out to make awareness of this. Go hit him up at the Bengal 4 on Twitter with some questions or whatnot about how to get your hands on this shirt and maybe rock it at week 4 at Paul Brown Stadium. Pretty cool stuff there. And we thank him for helping us out a little bit on some fantasy football stuff. We had a couple of calls come through, and I think we've got one on the line here. Hi, who's this?
It's A-Mac from Cincinnati, man.
Hey, what's going on?
What are you doing? How you guys doing?
We're doing all right, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. I missed you when you were in the city. I tried to link up with you, but I was foiled by the flaky babysitter. You know?
Well, I'm sorry I missed you, man.
No, it's all right, man. I feel like there'll be plenty more times in the future.
Hope so.
I wanted to comment on a couple things we just talked about on the show, and then I had like a little comment / question I want you guys maybe to address. A couple things I want to comment on. With the Dave Trump Twitter account, it's like, I understand, like, people shouldn't go to his page, like, bashing his teammates, obviously, but he does bring a little bit on
the show. He does a little bit, yeah.
He knows what he's doing, so, you know, there's a little bit of that. Hold it the second thing. Whatever, it doesn't matter, I'll get to another point. I dealt with a comment made in one of the interviews, I believe it was about them trying to go, or like, somebody asked a question about Joe doing a lot more play action from under center, and he made a comment about how it's a little bit different because he, you know, he got back to the defense for that amount of time. He's usually used to, you know, playing a bit more spread shotgun type deal and analyzing the defense the entire way. I was wondering if that gives you guys, like, I believe that he has the mental acuity to go overcome any type thing like that, but does that think, did that put any, maybe there'll be an adjustment period in his play, you know, for you guys, or is it just like a passing note in the ether? But that's my question. Outside of that, you guys are great. You guys keep doing what you do, and we love it and all that stuff.
Appreciate it, man.
And you guys have a good one.
All right, you too. Sure. So that is a little bit different, and I think there was some data that we put out on Cincy Jungle that we grabbed from Twitter that, you know, the Bengals, not only in terms of amount of pass attempts, but, you know, ones under center and all of that have increased at least through week 1, well above what was seen last year. I think part of this, again, John, is just the fact that, you know, Burrow directly under center more often this year just plays right into, we want to run the ball more, we want to be more effective, and we want to use play action. So to his question there, is there an adjustment period? Potentially, but it worked a bit last week. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah. So Burrow had 8 play action pass attempts that went for 68 yards. So it wasn't really like the base of the passing offense, but we did kind of see a little bit more of it. There's this age old debate of, do you have to like run the ball to set up play action, or does play action like does it just work regardless of the quality and the quantity of the running game? I think that they still believe that if they quote unquote establish the run, that their play action game will increase, and maybe that is a way to decrease the amount of actual pass rush that Burrow has to face. But I also think that it depends on the defense that you're playing. If you feel like your offensive line can hold up to the defensive line, maybe you don't have to run play action as much. But it should be a weapon that teams utilize regardless, because it's, for the most part, like majority like effective. And they didn't run it nearly enough probably last year based off the offensive line issues. So maybe this is somewhat of an adjustment period for Burrow.
It is. And I think also it's something that's beneficial for him in terms of, you know, I mean, they're going to spread it out. There's going to be shotgun formations. There's going to be times where he's under center. There's going to be play action plays. I just feel like the team last year relied so heavily on, you know, his system, this, a lot of the things that he did at LSU, which was that empty set, him in a shotgun formation, and it at times became predictable, and defense is kind of teed off. I mean, while Burrow still was productive, there were a lot of hits, sacks, all that stuff that we know at this point. And now when you're kind of able to do a couple of different things, and also this plays into, while there may be some struggles, this also plays into a continuing maturity of Joe Burrow as an NFL quarterback, being able to do different things in his second year in the league. So, you know, I think in a way it makes the offense better because it brings more balance. In a way, it also is a good thing because it could potentially protect Burrow a little bit more doing this kind of thing. But it also, while there may be a little bit of growing pains or adjustment period with it, I think there could be, you know, it shows that they're kind of expanding the horizons a little bit for the quarterback and what they're trying to do on offense. So there may be some issues, but I think that's to be expected doing some new things. And there was still some effectiveness shown last week. We've got a call waiting on the line, John. Did you want to get to one quick one before we get to that?
No, let's bring the caller on right now.
Okay, well, it's our good bud, Terrell, giving us a ring here on the Orange and Black Insider Listener Questions Live. Terrell, what's going on, dude?
How you guys doing?
We're doing well, man. Doing well. How are you?
Doing pretty good on a Friday, man. Enjoyed the game. It was just an all-out.
Were you there?
Nah.
Okay.
I actually just chilled at home and watched it, man.
Okay.
I don't have no complaints with the game. Not even a fourth down. I was cool with that. Only complaints I got with the game is Eli Apple and P. Ryan. Just with that, it was 3rd and 24, man. He should have did better. And the blocking with P-Ryan made me sick, man. It made me want to train back for Geo, man, for real.
Well, go ahead.
And last thing I was gonna say, man, just by saying Marshawn Lattimore and T.J. Watt getting paid. Y'all about Jesse Bates not getting paid yet. I think we're a whole new good better team than last year. A lot of people, they thinking we the same team from last year, but we ain't. And basically I was gonna say, if we ain't gonna use him, go ahead and trade him for a third or fourth round pick, because he could be the second or third option on somebody else's team. I just hate for us to just wait for the last minute and not do nothing about it. And we always got Trent Irwin and Thomas on the team. So at least try to trade to get one for the guy on the.
Well, yeah, there's a couple of questions on that. We'll get to that off the air here. Good hearing from you, Terrell. Thanks for calling in, bud. Have a good weekend. So there's a couple of questions in here as well. One from that kind of tie into this. Do you think Chris Evans will get some snaps? This is Vincent Armstrong. There was another one up here. I forget who else had said it, but essentially, you know, what's going on with Chris Evans? And, you know, we talked a lot about Eli Apple at this point in time. The Auden Tate thing that he also brought up, not getting a lot of attention there as well. I don't think that right now Auden Tate is going to command a third or fourth round pick going forward, unless a team is in the hunt and has some major injuries at wide receiver. But, you know, Evans comes into the conversation because of also what Terrell brought up, the struggles with P. Ryan in the pass blocking game. Mixon had his struggles in that as well. So I don't know, man. Chris Evans and Auden Tate, do you see bigger roles going forward? Again, it's just one game right now. But, I mean, do you see bigger roles for them going forward? Or is this kind of like, hey, maybe we just do the thing that we tend to do, which is overvalue some of these players because of preseason work?
For starters, if you get anything more than a sixth-round pick for Auden Tate, you run with it, because there's no way they're getting that on the trade market right now. That's just not happening. They're not trading Auden Tate because they're not going to get anything remotely worth what they think that he's worth. But also, man, like, it's the week one overreactions. Anyone who didn't play well week one, bench, trade, look for other options. Trey Hopkins, not allowed to have a bad game. Samaje Perine, not allowed to miss the block. Eli Apple, not allowed to be Eli Apple.
Yep.
Like, this is what we do every year. Right? We're so starved for football. We wait 9 months, and if a handful of players play bad, get them the hell out of there. Perine had a bad game. It's the Minnesota Vikings. They're awfully hard to prepare against in terms of just recognizing blitzes and pass rushes and stuff like that. P. Ryan is on the team for a reason. Honestly, if you combine P. Ryan and Joe Mixon, you probably have the best running back in the NFL, because he does the intellectual things a lot better and he processes his runs a lot better, and they still have trust in him. So allow him to make the mistakes. And if he continues to make mistakes, then obviously you have to implement Chris Evans a little bit more because he's shown promise in that area. But with Auden Tate, I do think it was a little interesting seeing Mike Thomas get maybe more reps coming off the bench of receiver than Auden Tate. Maybe that was something that they saw against the Vikings secondary. Maybe they thought Thomas had earned those opportunities. But unfortunately, he didn't really do that much. I think part of that was just Joe Burrow kind of being inaccurate on the one throw. Mike Thomas probably had a touchdown if Burrow puts a little bit closer to his chest. So the whole narrative with that could be different as well. So I think this is more or less just week one overreactions against a pretty good team, the Vikings.
I agree. And, you know, we saw some nice things out of P. Ryan late last year. The one thing that just kind of concerns me is, with P. Ryan at least, is even though he didn't have a lot of touches in preseason, this preseason he didn't look very good. And then it carried over into week one. But it's one week. I am interested to know what's going on with Auden Tate. I don't know. He has not shown enough consistency or endeared himself enough to the coaching staff. They just trust Mike Thomas more, which is also kind of weird, because Thomas was, you know, off the roster at one, you know, for a brief moment, and then they brought him back on, and Auden Tate was on the roster. And now Thomas just gets more of the looks. Again, it could be a matchup thing, could be a week one thing. We don't really know the full story at this point, but I mean, Zach Taylor likes Mike Thomas. I mean, that's clearly evident. Now, it just – there may be something different this week with that defensive back group that was exploited in Chicago last week. And maybe that's a time for Auden Tate to shine here, you know, especially if they end up trying to take the deep ball away and they want to get more of the short stuff and be more kind of possession-oriented. Maybe that'll play – into Auden Tate's wheelhouse this week. We'll see. But, I mean, clearly, Zach Taylor likes Mike Thomas and trusts him.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not just special teams. They see him as a legit backup at receiver. But also, I guess they kind of see that for Trenton Irwin, as we had a question from the Positive Universal Project, David G. Why did they call up Trenton Irwin from the practice squad? This seems like you could make the argument that Irwin had the best offseason training camp preseason out of the guys currently on the practice squad, but I think this brings up a good point. That brings you to 7 receivers. You're only probably going to activate 5 or maybe 6. So do you see this as just Irwin earning this opportunity and this game check for his offseason, or do you think there's some type of plan here for the reason of why they're adding a little bit more depth?
You know, I don't really know what to make of this. We talked a little bit about it on Wednesday, where we thought, you know, maybe this was a ploy where, you know, Irwin's going to be the punt return guy this week. You're going to get a little more Darius Phillips on defense. And maybe that is the plan in one form or another. I just it sounds like it's still going to be Eli Apple's show until Trey Waynes comes back. So I don't know how much I believe in that little theory that you and I talked about on Wednesday. I don't know, again, like kind of what I mentioned with Auden Tate, I don't know if they're going to try and use, you know, both Boyd and maybe Irwin out of, you know, some dual slot roles. Auden Tate, you know, kind of make it more, a little bit more of a possession game. If they're worried about a Khalil Mack getting the ball out quick, a little more quickly this week, I don't know. So I don't really know what to make of the Irwin call up out of the practice squad, especially when you've got, you know, you just picked up Sean Davis and what's going to go on there with Ricardo Allen on IR. A lot of moving parts here. So I, quite honestly, I wish I could have a better answer. I don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah, I guess the more that I personally think about it, the more it's probably for special teams. I don't know off the top of my head how much Ricardo Allen played on special teams, but I know that Irwin was obviously given a lot of opportunities to be on kickoff and punt teams in the preseason. So I would assume if he is active for this week, that is where he's going to make the most of his impact. But at the end of the day, I think he's still, you know, obviously really favored in the organization at the moment. And I think they want to give him potentially a shot if that opportunity comes up.
It's probably honestly a myriad of a lot of the things, the reasons we've talked about. I mean, it's probably, yeah, like you said, they want him to do a little special teams work. Maybe there's going to be more Darius Phillips on defense, even if he's not starting on the boundary. Maybe he's going to be a little more present on defense. And so you're going to need a punt return or two from Irwin. Maybe he's going to be part of the offensive game plan here and there, like an Alex Erickson was at times in that dual slot role. It could be a little bit of everything.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're going to be here a little while longer answering some questions for you. But before we do, we want to tell you about our partnership with Symbol, S-I-M-B-U-L-L, and the website is simbull.app/OBI, where you can trade stocks, trade teams and shares of teams like they are stocks. You can buy, sell, trade, make some money off of teams that you are passionate about, you feel you can make some money on. Maybe it's a little bit of both. And if you use the promo code OBI, of course, short for Orange and Black Insider, you get a free week of Symbol Gold along with a $25 deposit that you make in using that promo code. So really, really cool endeavor that Symbol has embarked upon, and we're happy to be partnering with them for the regular season, John.
Absolutely, man. Symbol is the stock market for sports, where you can use your sports knowledge to buy low, sell high, earn cash payouts when your teams win. Week one overreactions, they're still ongoing. Why not use that to your advantage? You have a lot of users buying and selling teams based off of what they did in the first week of an 18-week NFL regular season. So if you want to buy low on a team that didn't necessarily play well in week one, or you want to keep investing in a team that did, Symbol gives you the platform to do that, and you can join the 7,000-plus early adopters who have already started to invest in their favorite teams by visiting www.sibull.app. Make sure to use the promo code OBI to get your free week of Symbol Gold, and you can start investing too.
Man, I've talked to some fans and listeners of our show, some Bengals fans and listeners of our show that got in right when we first partnered with Symbol and bought some shares of the Bengals, and man, they're looking pretty smart right now. So they've made some money, and you gotta get in there using that promo code OBI. You want to go next, John, or did you pick the last one here? I forget.
I think I picked the last one, but I see another one that we can go to.
Okay, go for it.
So Vincent Armstrong is asking, basically, what are three things that you, Anthony Cosenza, want to see this weekend out of this team?
Three things that I want to see out of this team. Improved interior offensive line play is one. I would like to see I thought the defensive ends, defensive line in general played well, including the ends, but I would like to see a similar, if not improvement, on high level of play from the defensive line, because I think that bodes well for the Bengals if that takes place. And I'd like to see a little more involvement from Tyler Boyd. I think that those three things, if you're able to utilize those three things, you're going to have a pretty successful afternoon. And in terms of when you look at what transpired last week and how this team can improve from week to week, those are a couple of areas where I would identify as, hey, you know, you can improve on a couple of those areas. And if you improve on one of the others I mentioned, you're going to have a really, really good day on defense.
Yeah, I think for this question, I'm going to take more of like an observation approach maybe. So for one, I'm going to monitor the run-pass ratio again, see if that is still very much 50-50, see if it's still more or less conservative on the early downs, to see if Burrow is on this somewhat of a pitch count for straight true dropbacks. I want to see, even if they're playing against a weaker secondary, if they don't want to pass as much on first and second down, how much that impacts the overall flow of the offense. On defense, I am interested to see if they use more of Brandon Wilson potentially to replace Ricardo Allen, or if they just want to change up things and just keep Bell and Jesse Bates, maybe implement more dime looks to add a fourth cornerback out there if they want to potentially counter whatever passing concepts that Andy Dalton is out there. I don't really know much about this Bears offense. I know that David Montgomery is very talented, and I guess that would be the third thing. How do the linebackers, Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt, who both play pretty well in run defense, they stopped Dalvin Cook to like 60-something yards and 20 carries, which is pretty hard to do. So they have another weak offensive line to go up against, but another very talented running back who can create some yards after contact and is pretty elusive. David Montgomery is a Cincinnati kid. He went to Mount Healthy High School, so somewhat of a, not a reunion game, but, you know, he's going up against a team that he knew of as a kid. So there's some maybe potential motivation factor in there. So Wilson, Pratt have to make sure to keep Montgomery between the hash marks there. And another great performance from the defensive line, run defense would be good too, because I think if they stop Montgomery, they should have no issue with scoring more than the Bears.
The defensive line is key to me because Andy Dalton, we know, is a rhythm quarterback, right? If he gets feeling pretty good early, if he's hitting passes early, he's not feeling pressure early, he tends to play okay and play pretty well. If there's pressure, if they get him out of sorts early, if he's feeling a little heat from Justin Fields and the fan base, you know, it could be a long day for Andy, but they gotta get on him quick. Because we know if Andy gets off to a hot start, you know, he can play pretty well at times. So that is another thing to kind of keep an eye on. I thought this was a good question from 513 in our text line here. If you're a part of the coaching staff, what kind of game plan would you want to run out there Sunday? Khalil Mack is a problem and he'd need to be contained. You double team him all game or trust the tackle one-on-one to give the backs and Burrow enough time. I will say this, that what you don't want to do is ever isolate a tight end on Khalil Mack. We've seen that just absolutely be disastrous for teams if they somehow, you know, miss an assignment and or just have a tight end try and go one-on-one with him. What you would probably want to do, Riley Reiff, again, the tackles played really well last week. Riley Reiff and Jonah Williams didn't allow a hit, sack, or pressure on Joe Burrow. So, you know, that doesn't mean that they should just let things ride, I don't think. I think you should probably have someone there to help chip Khalil Mack. The backs proved last week they're still a work in progress in pass protection. So, you know, having them back there, yeah, that helps, but there's still some missed assignments there, John. So you got to negate him as a factor in this game. And I think, you know, maybe at some extra tight end help. I do think Reiff is a, you know, Reiff and Jonah are big improvements on the offensive line here this week. So I'm a little more confident than I would be that if it was a Bobby Hart type of situation, I guess. But I don't know. Those are some ideas.
Yeah, you always want to keep an extra tight end, Drew Sample, in there to pass block until he goes up against Danielle Hunter one-on-one and gives up a sack.
Right.
Like, right. Honestly, like most of the sacks that the Bengals gave up, it was either Pirine, it was Hopkins missing up, and it was Sample, I think. And I think Nick Vigil came free on some type of a broken assignment on like a play action pass. So
yeah, and Harrison Smith did too, I think. He kind of blitzed and got up the middle.
Right, and we've said it before, but I'll say it again. Like, that's just Vikings things. That's something you have to expect going up against that defense. The Bears, since they saw Vic Fangio walk out the door for the Denver Broncos, they just have not been as effective on defense. They still have talent. They still have guys who can win one-on-one matchups. But, yeah, the less you have Drew Sample blocking Khalil Mack one-on-one, the better.
Yeah, most definitely. What, you got another that you see there?
Let's see here. Rob Crute is asking, what do you think about running a trick play? To your knowledge, man, like, what is the one trick play that's come to your mind in the last 2 years? Because I can't really necessarily think of one outside of something like a basic flea flicker, which I think they ran like in Taylor's first ever game against Seattle.
Yeah, they ran in Seattle. Yeah, I was there for that one. So that's the only one that really comes. I mean, what's your definition of a trick play? I mean, is a jet sweep a trick play? Is a reverse a trick play? You know what I mean? It just kind of depends on what you're doing here. And kind of like what we talked about with the fourth downs on Wednesday, when they work, you look like a genius. And when they don't work, you look like a fool, right? I mean, the opportunity to trip over your own feet, so to speak, in these types of, you know, wacky play designs, they're there, and they, you know, they can make people look a little foolish if you don't execute them correctly. So, you know, I also don't think that it's I don't think it's really needed. I mean, at this point, you've got Joe Burrow, and like we talked about the other night, the offense can be methodical and efficient with Joe Burrow, and if it works, I mean, yeah, I have a little fun, throw an occasional wrinkle in there, I guess, but I don't know that it's definitively needed at this point. But for the second part of the question, I remember that week one in Seattle, the flea flicker, I think it was to John Ross, that worked well.
I mean, I think some fans would qualify 4th-and-1 at their own 30 as a trick play, and that obviously didn't bode well for the fan base. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, Justin Money, 5-1-3, I want to see Tyler Boyd throw a pass. Like, when they drafted Tyler Boyd and they let Mohamed Sanu walk, like, Tyler Boyd threw a decent amount at Pittsburgh. I think he was a former quarterback himself. So they let their best quarterback, Mohamed Sanu, walk in free agency that offseason, and then they added another college receiver who also has history throwing the ball. So I think Boyd can potentially complete some deep passes. I think that did happen once, but I don't know if that came before or after Marvin Lewis's firing. So it's been a while. I would be down to see it again if the situation called for it.
Right. And you gotta make sure that, yeah. If you're gonna call something like that, you gotta make sure that things are dialed up the right way. I got a tweet from Low Cash Cat 277. Hi, Anthony and John. Thanks for the content. Glad you were able to visit Paul Brown Stadium and be treated to a victory Sunday, Anthony. My question is, what are your thoughts on the stadium? And obviously, yours as well, John. It's not my, I mean, for those who don't know, it's not my first time that I've been to Paul Brown Stadium. I've been to Paul Brown Stadium, I think, four or five times now. But, you know, I like the exterior aesthetic from it as you stand away and kind of catch the view. And, you know, if you get in a building there and you catch the view, you can see the river behind it. And I really like that aesthetic. I think the bridge thing is kind of cool where people, unfortunately, we've seen people leave games early on that bridge. But, you know, I think that's kind of a cool aesthetic. I mean, overall, inside, there's not a lot of, it's very Bengals-esque in terms of there's not a lot of frills inside. There's not a lot, you know, it's not these state-of-the-art stadiums that you see now that are being built in LA and Vegas and all these crazy ones, you know, Dallas. But the new, they kind of made some improvements. There's the big new video screen up there that looks nice. And obviously they did the ruler of the jungle thing that they added, a little platform over there that I thought was kind of cool. Overall, I mean, it's fine. It's not like I go in there and be like, wow, what a stadium. I mean, I love it because it's the Bengals and I love going there, and I just don't get to go there, you know, 8+ times a year. But in terms of, you know, it's not one of these behemoths that have been built recently for some of these other teams.
I think it looks okay for being 20 years old.
Yeah,
it's tough to compare them to to use your wording, the behemoths that you have in Atlanta and Dallas and now Los Angeles and even New York. So, you know, it's very Cincinnatian. You know, Cincinnati is not this metropolis that goes absolutely big because of certain restrictions. So I think it fits the vibe of the city. And honestly, I agree. Like, I like the exterior aesthetic with like the panels and the where the lights are, like how like kind of like sharpens and curves in and stuff like that. Yeah. I think it looks nice along the river, and for being 20 years old, it's in pretty decent shape. There's some things that they can improve, and specifically with the concourses, traversing up to the 300 sections could definitely be improved as well. But I think overall it's fine. You know, they don't really need to think about a major overhaul of any kind.
I thought it was really cool also. I don't know if people saw it on Twitter, but what they have done for fan experience right outside the stadium, kind of by the riverbanks there, they've propped up a concert stage, and they've done, you know, they had like little photo ops outside, right outside of the stadium, and a grassy area. And so they kind of, you know, you got to cross the street, I think, or at least go in the stadium the back way closer to the river to kind of experience some of that stuff. But I think some of the things that they've added right outside of the stadium were also pretty cool in terms of fan experience and kind of getting people hyped for the game there as well. So I always love going there. And as I mentioned the other night, I had a great time and met a bunch of cool people, which I'm stoked about. We want to get to maybe one or two others before we hop out of here, John.
There's a discussion going on right now about what are Mike Brown's pronouns, which is interesting.
Okay.
Nickel and dime. Okay. Do you guys give autographs from Mark Fry? I've never given my autograph to someone, but I would be down to make Mark Fry the first one.
Yeah.
In our entrepreneurship.
I don't know what we would sign. What do you want us to sign, Mark? We can sign something for you. that's pretty funny. Let's see the comment thread here, and we'll do one more look at the comment thread isn't pulling up for me right now on Cincy Jungle. So I'll have to,
Yes, man. We have one from, it's from kid_sin. He's asking, was the defensive line as good as the numbers say, or was the Vikings offense line just bad? All the holding penalties seem to indicate the defense line was just dominating with a crowd noise assist. I think the crowd noise did have some impact, at least early in the game. They had like multiple false starts, I think, on the first drive, and that could be attested to the crowd noise in itself. I do think that Hendrickson himself, I think, warranted a handful of holding penalties, but honestly, I think it was both. You know, the Vikings don't have necessarily a great offensive line. They just paid the right tackle like $100 million for 5 years, and he didn't play necessarily that great against Sam Hubbard to run defense. But BJ Hill and Larry Ogunjobi, I think they objectively played good and just took advantage of a pretty good matchup. So I think this is a little bit of a both.
That's how I feel. It's exactly. I think it was both. I think the crowd noise prompted some of those false starts. I think the Vikings offensive line didn't play all that well, but I also think the Bengals defensive line, particularly in the interior, Ogunjobi, BJ Hill, DJ Reader, all played really well, had pretty good PFF scores. And then of course you had Hendrickson being very active, Sam Hubbard being very active. So this group stays healthy and they continue to play out like that. And also Cam Sample had a couple of nice plays too. We didn't really talk about him very much. He was in there rushing the passer and getting some pressure. So, I think this group is a pretty good one. If they stay healthy, they can't really afford any more losses. I mean, they've been able to, at least for 1 week, overcome the Wyatt, Hubert, Joseph Osai losses. Can't really have too many more than that up front at this point. They need to stay healthy. They need to have a rotation. They need to remain deep on the defensive line for it to remain active. John, any others before we bounce out of here, my man?
Now we're getting some Randall hype, you know. He's blushing a little bit. He loves you guys just as much as you love him, you know. Randall appreciates. He's rocking my hat right now. He's rocking the Sheeran hat.
So. Yes, and you rocked that proudly and well at the game. That was pretty legit. I'm surprised you got that so fast.
I was surprised too. I was expecting it sometime this week, and I got it on Saturday as well as my cousin did. So they were quick with it. I guess only two were ordered. So you know,
I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to say that. That's funny. All right. Well, we're going to get on out of here. Enjoy week two. In case you haven't checked it out yet, go check out our Wednesday night show. John and I gave some predictions, keys of the game, and reviewed the game against the Vikings. That was a lot of fun. So check that out. We did the water cooler chat earlier this week, and then we'll be getting you a little bit of fantasy football stuff and a post game show this week. I didn't get to do that last week because I was cruising around town, so I didn't get to do that. So we'll be giving you that. Check out this show and all of the Cincy Jungle podcast show, whether it's ours, Orange is the New Black from Ace and Zim, or Chalk Talk by Matt Minnick on your favorite audio streamer. Subscribe to the podcast channel. Leave a review if you could, hopefully a good one. Give us a little more exposure if you could. That'd be awesome. And of course, if you like the videos, subscribe to our YouTube channel. And of course, turn on the bell to be notified when we go live, when new content is available, and all of that. John, let's have a good week too, man.
Have a good weekend, man.
All right. We'll see you everybody later. Take it easy.